A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery. Grow your contact list and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who hopes this podcast just goes out into the world like a big house meeting. I'm Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our Wednesday night coverage here of Big Brother 18. Here to talk about episode number 4 of the Big Brother 18. And with me live to talk about it all, plus the Big Brother live feeds, here is the great Alex Kidwell. Alex, how are you?
Oh, Rob, I'm a free dandelion tonight. Just flowing, hanging in the breeze.
Yeah.
Just letting it all go. It's all good.
You're kind of like the glue. You hold the whole thing together. That's sort of like what you are.
Oh, boy. That's some of that like cheap, like wood glue that you get at like the CVS or something that doesn't hold up very long.
So right.
I'm a little worried if that's the case.
Either the glue or the shaving cream or whatever sort of substance we're going to use to start pranking people. That's like you.
That seems more apt.
Yeah.
I can go with that.
All right. Well, we are watching history in the making here in the young Big Brother 18 season as Jose, and his brotherhood of idiots with Victor and with Paul. They're just careening off the cliff as we get closer and closer to Thursday. And what we should be witness to one of the great Big Brother blindsides coming up on Thursday. We are on the precipice of history, Alex.
Yeah, Rob, if this is the revolution, then I'm content to stay in the old regime because it's a bunch of chaos and anarchy on our future. I can't wait for Thursday. Everyone should know. Yeah, we're really, really setting up for these guys to just be hit with the proverbial smack upside the head, as Davon alluded to.
Yeah, it should be wonderful television to watch on Thursday. Of course, we will be live to cover it all, continuing coverage of the revolution, the fall of a revolution, tomorrow night at 10:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Special guest Johnny Mack. I'm sure that he will have some fun things to say as well about Jose's inevitable eviction coming up on Thursday. Very little drama heading into Thursday, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it does seem like there's a slight possibility maybe they could catch on, but that's been hanging there for so long. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems unlikely now.
Yeah, it seems like the show is not even, really like a Big Brother week, really does play with it. I feel like that the show is not even really floating that possibility out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as I've, been paying close attention, there's pretty much no reason to float any other scenario out there. I mean, it's clearly just Jose and his buddies that are operating on, a plane of delusion. Everyone else is like, well aware of what's happening, and they're starting to advance play beyond that. These guys think they know what's happening and are starting to think about next week and the week after on false pretenses. And yeah, they're just getting further and further down the rabbit hole of stupid, if you will.
Okay, so a lot of stuff to talk through, of course. You guys are here with us live and a big part of this conversation. Hashtag RHAP, or you can go ahead and leave us comments on our YouTube page at robiswebsite.com/YouTube. So let's dig in tonight, and I guess let's start at this house meeting because, the week one house meeting, are we technically week two, Alex? I don't want to misspeak here tonight. If we're being technical, is this week one or week two of Big Brother?
If we're being technical, this is week one and someone got Jody'd.
Okay, great. All right. So
technically speaking,
the week one house meeting never really goes over well in the Big Brother house. And we had one of the more disastrous house meetings I think we've ever bore witness to on a Big Brother season.
Yeah, yeah, really bad. I mean, it was teased the night before, and a lot of people were excited because they knew what this was. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're watching the feeds, you knew what this was going to be. You knew where Jose stands and where he thinks he stands and the vast discrepancy between the two. And yeah, I mean, predictably, yeah, he, you know, first of all, you look at who's in that room. You've got Davon and James, and you have to laugh right there just from the sheer absence of mind to think that those people are on his side when his plan is to get rid of the vets. It's just... there's just no words, Rob. There really are no words.
Yeah, it just really, at what point where, you know, James comes in the room, it's one thing, okay, Davon is at least on his team. Okay, fine, let's give him that. But at the point that James is there ever any consideration to sort of change the message going through Jose's head?
Yeah, you would think, but right. And then not only that, but Bronte is, you know, really just kind of... you know, if Bridget was her spy, that spy is getting hanged for treason right now.
Okay, because well, let's leave Spygate.
Blew her identity entirely.
That's a whole different situation of blown cover. But let's just focus on this house meeting because he really, you know, said, hey, we have to make our move. We have to target Pauly. That's it. He has to go. I'm not sure exactly why that, you know, he has such an axe to grind against Pauly, but he was really trying to make his case there. That's his one agenda. Get rid of Pauly.
Yeah, well, I mean, the move was made, you know, this was like, if I remember correctly, and it feels like a week ago because of all this craziness, but I believe Saturday afternoon, evening. And, you know, so this was at a point where Paul has the veto, but hasn't used it to take himself off yet. So at that moment, the only tangible other target for votes is Pauly. And Jose, you know, he just, yeah, like his claim is that he's A, both very good at this game and B, you know, the most honest person in the house, mm-hmm. which my past knowledge of Big Brother indicates that the two are always mutually exclusive. But, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about. According to these guys, that you can't study the strategy of this game, according to Paul. So,
yeah,
there's nothing to be learned from past seasons, you know, allegedly.
The fact, and again, the episode opened with a great moment of Jose putting all the pieces together that Michelle is the person who won the roadkill, and she was the person who put Paul up on the block, and she has to go, and him bringing in Frank. We saw him twice tonight talking with Frank and confiding in Frank, who is clearly not working with Jose, and to say to Frank that it was Michelle who did this. That was the kind of person to put up Paul on the block.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I mean, just a spot-on read from Jose every time you check in. And I mean, you know, the edit, like, people can't say the edit isn't being fair because he is. He's putting himself out there and he's just, you know, he's leaping before he looks every time, and every time there is no safety net.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
Speaking of Michelle, she was walking around. She seemed to have a new costume. So was that a punishment, or she was just wearing her, she had to wear that from the veto competition?
Yeah, that was just, you know, I'm the host. They're getting costumes. The host gets a costume. They're dogs. She's the fire hydrant.
Okay.
Ha ha, Rob.
Yeah.
Isn't it silly?
Okay. That really threw me off a little bit. I was trying to figure out what punishment she had at that point in time. But you would think that she wouldn't want to wear the fire hydrant costume for any time longer than you had to.
You would think, but honestly, given that she's stuck in pixels, that's actually an improvement from her current situation.
Yeah. Okay. So we heard a couple other things from Jose tonight when he was confiding in Frank. In addition to he is the glue, he is the messiah. He gave himself another title tonight.
I'm CEO in my mind.
He is the CEO of this corporation.
Yeah, well, he's really challenging Bernie Madoff in terms of best CEOs and, you know, how well they take care of their people, I think, because he's hanging himself out to dry. And in pretty short order, his, his crew is going to find themselves in some boiling hot water.
Yeah, the CEO also delivered this prophecy tonight.
Trust me, I'm going to have no problems with getting everyone on board and getting Pauly out of the house this week.
He's going to have no problems with it. So really, is calling his shot about how easy this is going to be going into Thursday.
Yep, and you know, along with so many of his take that his DRs are so on point has been just immaculate.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really, it's a sign of how bad Jose has been that we saw on multiple occasions tonight, James is in the diary room talking about, can you believe this guy? Can you believe how little he knows about this game? James is openly mocking Jose's lack of strategy.
Right. Yeah, we don't exactly remember James as a Dr. Will Kirby, but James is, he really makes Jose... I mean, Jose really does make James look like Dan. It's pretty alarming.
Yeah. And so you have Victor and you have Paul with Jose, these three idiots. They're basically like, I guess if you had to say, I don't know, like I was trying to compare them to the three amigos. It's like if Malcolm was also a bad player, I guess that Paul might be the Malcolm of this group from the three amigos. But it's hard to remember a group of three guys on reality TV as bad as this group.
Yeah, Rob, I think the closest we've had is actually Big Brother 4 with the Three Stooges.
Stooges.
I tend to think of these guys as like the Three Stooges, the second coming, because really, if you remember, it was, I believe, Robert, Nathan, and G. And those guys really were just always a step behind the rest of the house, you know what I mean? And just scrambling to try to keep up. I feel like these guys are like four or five steps behind, but the same principle applies.
However, these new Three Stooges have become such a great camouflage for the Spy Girls, who had a rough night as well. And unfortunately, the hopes for knocking out the veterans, or at least knocking out this 8-pack plus Pauly, resides with these six terrible first-time players.
Yep. Not much of a revolution at all. This is kind of like the Wall Street movement, in that, like, you know, a lot of noise being made, but ultimately it doesn't seem like a lot is going to come from it.
Right. This is like the Friends cast if it was cast with idiots who really also were at times getting a little bit teetering on the unlikable.
That's fair.
Yeah. So then we have these three women who, again, you know, the idea of the Spy Girls is adorable in theory, but then in execution tonight, it was a comedy of errors on their own when they decided to head down to this house meeting. So we ended up with Bronte and Natalie heading to the house meeting, sending Bridget up to the HOH to spy on the people not going to the house meeting.
A plan that, you know, you had a feeling was doomed from conception, Rob. It didn't ever seem like this was going to be something that was going to work. Bridget's just so adorably naive that, like, you know, the thought, I guess, that you could see where, like, oh, no one would suspect her. The problem is that no one would suspect her for a reason. She's a terrible spy, and that's why you don't use her. There's a reason you don't suspect these people. It's because they're not suited for this line of work, Bronte.
So they sent Bronte up there. How bad was Bronte in that? Where it was almost like in a scene in a movie that they're asking her, so what are you doing here? And she was just like shrugging. Just like, what? She had like no cover.
No, really. And yeah, I mean, the fact that she even then had a DR where she even, you know, made any indication that there might be a chance her cover wasn't blown, to me speaks to self-awareness, lack of self-awareness. But yeah, she really was just sitting there. I'm reminded of like the swimmer in Jaws, who's just kind of like floating in the water helplessly, just kind of waiting for something to happen.
Floaters get a life vest.
You know, it's not going to be good, whatever it is.
Yeah. So if we were pinning these hopes and we came into this season 1 week ago tonight and we were like, boy, it would be great to see, maybe we have the first time in the history of the show or history of reality TV where the new players really can stick it to the veterans. We were not blessed with a specifically talented group of first time players here in this season.
No, I think, if you kind of, you know, it's a bit of a cocktail that spell success for the vets here. And I think you take, you know, several doses of, you know, inexperienced and naive player. I think you add in the team's twist, which for a new player might, you know, like Jose seems to think Davon's on his side because he doesn't think it makes sense for Davon not to be on his side. You know, that he doesn't understand that the teams don't really matter. So you factor that in. You factor in the roadkill element, which, you know, Frank and Nicole and James, at least those three, are remembered for competition wins. So, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of elements here that play to the vet's strengths. And right, the when you look at the resistance, when you look at the other side, you can begin to understand why a player like Michelle, who actually does understand this game, gravitated towards the veterans. Because if she had chosen the other path, you know, with this path, there is always the possibility the vets are going to have to take each other out at some point. She could be a piece that one of them tries to pick up and probably will. If she sticks, you know, if she puts all her chips in the Jose basket, we see where that goes. That's there's not good return on that investment in all likelihood.
Yeah, we are longing for the days of Big Brother 13 in terms of the strategy coming from the first time players.
Oh, yeah. Kalia, like, pretending she didn't vote, if she voted with the regulators where she didn't, would probably end this season as the best move of the season.
Luan would be the Derek of these first-time players.
I don't know if I'd go quite that far, but I like where your head's at.
Okay. Comedy of Errors, really Keystone Cops with Jose and Victor and that whole crew, plus the Spy Girls. But one of the things that I was really confused about at the end of the episode was, you know, Paulie is up in the HOH room. It's sort of very clear. Jose is just, you know, a grease fire at this point. He's trying to run this house meeting. Why was it in Paulie's best interests to go and confront Jose? If the whole idea is we can't let Jose know for whatever reason, or it'll be so funny when he thinks he's running the show and then he gets evicted on Thursday. Why was it in Paulie's best interest to even have that confrontation or that conversation with him in the kitchen?
Great question. It is not. This is, to me, indicative of, like, we've seen a little bit, and we haven't really seen it on the show yet, but people have talked about kind of Tiffany exhibiting some mannerisms of Vanessa. This, to me, is Paulie exhibiting some mannerisms of Cody. We didn't see Cody on the block very often, but when he did, he was more nervous than he really should have been, considering how often he was up against someone who had no chance of staying against him. Paulie's in that same position here. He is definitely a pawn. He's as safe as you can be being on the block in the Big Brother house. It still bothers him, and it's still making him nervous, and it's those nerves that cause him to react there. You're right. The best thing he could say is nothing.
I mean, it seems like it's such a joke that what Jose is up to. I don't understand why he doesn't just sit back and chill and laugh this all off. And why go and what is the upside there of telling Jose, hey, stop campaigning against me?
Yeah, no upside. It's just not a rational thought. You know, this is just, you know, it speaks to some of the things that you can't really understand when you don't play the game, that other than, you know, what people say, which is that it's really nerve wracking being on the block. You feel like people are talking about you every corner you turn in the house. You can't help but think that people are plotting against you, you know, and that's something that when you're in Paulie's position, the best thing you can do is just, right, take a deep breath and not let that affect you, not let that go to your head, because the only thing that can damage his standing in the game right now would be him, you know, blowing up in some kind of way that alienates more people from his cause than just the little Jose contingent.
Because he's in such a nice position, I feel like, that he can walk away from this week having survived the block and been, you know, had sort of the reassurance that he's going to be fine this week. There's no reason to believe, I mean, for at least from what I'm seeing, that he's in danger. So just to come off as paranoid and have to antagonize, where then he's still, hypothetically, if Paul wins an HOH down the road, like where he's still a target for that side of the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I think, right, the fact that he's a physical guy and sees himself as a competitive player, you know, is a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy where he would target someone like him. So he's scared that other people would do the same, because why wouldn't they? You know? Mm-hmm.
So talk to me, Alex, about why was Bridget the replacement nominee? Was it just a case of there was almost nobody left for Frank to pick?
Yeah, if you look at the nominee options left, I mean, you've got Bridget, Michelle, Davon, Zakiya, Frank. That's it. So the only player not in his alliance or named Frank is Bridget. And I mean, yeah. And then, you know, also couple that with the fact that it was Saturday that Frank goes and makes his secret nomination for the ceremony on Sunday this week. It was a little different. We had a veto competition on Friday as opposed to Saturday, and then a meeting on Sunday as opposed to Monday. Because of that, you know, the timing was bad for Bridget. Saturday was the meeting. Saturday is when she's like going and trying to do the spy thing. Like, timing could not have been worse for this girl. So Bridget was on the tips of everyone's tongues as this player who's trying to make a move, bless her heart, but she's so bad and it's so obvious right at the moment Frank's called in the DR for nominations. So that does not play well to her favor.
So you feel like that the show did depict that in the right way, where there she did go up to the HOH, she was outed as a spy, and that was a factor in her being nominated?
Yeah, I think it was a factor, but like I said, again, I don't think it would make a difference one way or another. I think if you look at the other options, Frank is really just left with no other choices. You've got half the house safe between James's team having one and then Nicole's team having HOH.
Okay. Then we also had the veto competition tonight. We saw Paul win the veto competition. Do you feel like that this was an anomaly, or do you feel like that Paul is going to be somebody that he's the real threat on this side of house of this group of three, where you feel like that he could probably rattle off some of these competitions?
Well, I think you have to consider at least this one an anomaly, given the manner in which he wins it. This is a puzzle competition. What he did was the equivalent of like that kid who would like, I don't know if you ever played the game Perfection, Rob, where you're supposed to put like little pieces in holes that fit those shapes.
Yeah.
And within a lot of time. And there was always that one kid who would like try to take the circle and just make it go in the square. And that was Paul in this competition. Paul just mashed it together. And by the sheer like just irony of will, it came together for him. There's no like reasonable explanation for why this should work. There's no survivor puzzle I can think of where this plays correctly, where you're like, well, I could do it the way they want me to, or I could just mash it and make this cluster, and now this works too. So I think Paul really lucked out here.
But no credit for thinking outside the box?
Oh, you know, I suppose we have to give him some credit, but I think the description of a caveman is apt. Like, that's where someone whose first move is with their hands goes to. You know what I mean? Like, just stuff it in. Like, can it stuff? Why won't it stuff? So, wow. You know, I think, you know, maybe if we see him go, like, to a structure and then come back to that, that's one thing. But to me, that was, like, his first go-to, and that speaks to kind of where his head's at. And Jose going straight to the elaborate heart speaks to where his head's at, in that, you know, it's fails to see what's right in front of him and is seeing things everywhere else.
Yeah. So we are able to have Paul come up off the block. So we're going to get the block set for this week with Jose versus Paulie versus Bridget. And with these three nominee scenarios, you know, you're always going to have this person that's going to have no votes. What a waste to have Bridget up here on the block at this point.
Yeah, I mean, right. We've always talked about the hypothetical scenario where you have like enough factions and ideas in the house where you could see votes go to three separate people, but it doesn't seem like a likely scenario. I don't know if we'd ever really see it play out.
Let me give you this scenario for a think tank. So we got the roadkill. We got the third nominee. How about this? Somebody wins the veto with three nominees. Let's go down to two nominees for the week. How about that? What do you think of that twist?
Yeah, I like that a lot better because, you know, that creates a more interesting dynamic for me in terms of not just the vote, where it's, I mean, it should always be binary, and even pretending it's not is, you know, just a flaw. Yeah. But, you know, beyond that, just the element of kind of, you know, I just think, you know, when you do it this way, you really are diluting HOH in a way that I'm not wholly comfortable with. I think that, you know, that position of power is so important to this game. Choosing whether or not you want to compete for it is a real decision. You know, I still feel like the cons of roadkill outweigh the pros, but it's early yet.
Okay. All right. So we'll see ultimately if Big Brother ever considers that. I won't hold my breath on it. I do want to start to get to some of our questions in a little bit. Let me just ask you this, and maybe this goes into the live feeds, and tell me if you think there's anything that we shouldn't talk about. But we got to see this prank tonight where we saw people like putting stuff on Paul while he was sleeping. I know there's been a lot of pranks in the BB18 house. Could you talk a little bit about what's been going on with all of the pranks and how it's had any impact on the game so far?
Sure. I mean, I guess, you know, it has minimal impact on the strategic game, except for the extent that, like, how it makes people feel about a certain individual. You know what I mean? And, you know, James is the one who's doing this the most. I mean, that was his go-to, that was his thing in Big Brother 17. That's what people remember him for. I can't help but think that that's a massive piece of why he was brought back, and they probably told him, you know, make sure you're doing lots of pranks when they before you go in there. I mean, you know, because that's the kind of direction you would give him. Why wouldn't you? So yeah, I you know, I always knew that was going to be a big factor here when we found out James is going to be on the season. As time goes on, it does seem like it's bothering certain people. Victor, most notably, is kind of over it with James's pranks. You know, they do tend to involve food, Rob, and Victor likes to eat. And when he looks around and there's not much left to eat and he feels like James's pranks have wasted a lot of food, that's not sitting too well with him.
So not ideal.
It's interesting that it should affect the strategic game, because you would think it wouldn't. But right, it really just comes down to, like, is what you're doing pissing people off or not, you know?
Do you have an example of anything clever or really outside of the box? Could you just give us a taste of some of the pranks that we haven't seen yet on the show?
I'm trying to think. So, like, he did something with bread where he got, like, a ton of bread out. And there's been a couple things now where it's just – but it's really, you know, it's like mustard. Well,
what is he doing with the bread?
I can't even remember what he ended up doing with it. With the mayo, he put it in the lotion. Like, it's little things. It's the kind of things you would think of in, like, fifth or sixth grade. Yeah, it's nothing too elaborate. It's like, let's put this bucket of something on the door and see who walks through it kind of level of thought. You know what I mean? So I get it. Yeah, it's a lot with the shaving cream. And, yeah, condiments are always an easy go-to, I feel like.
Okay, so we're getting a word in the chat.
Pillowcase,
the
pillowcase, that's
old,
right.
The old bread in the pillowcase trick.
Yeah,
So just talk me through the execution of this. So we put bread in the pillowcase, and then what happens? Somebody comes in, and they take a nap, and what's the big prank part?
I was going to let you keep going, Rob, because I had nothing to add. Yep, and step two? Step three, profit. Yeah, I don't know. I got nothing for you.
Okay. All right, boy. I'm gonna try that to Nicole and see how that what goes on.
Well, yeah, the alternate thing is that there is a huge ant problem in this. I mean, there's always an ant problem in the Big Brother house, but certainly bread in the pillowcase and stuff like that, you know, not doing any favors. So the fact that there's ants, like, already made their way up the wall to the HOH room and stuff, like, certainly people are, you know, they don't like that. And they're, you know, some people are pointing to James as a reason.
Does he toast the bread first?
No, well, I mean, it seems like too much work, and you know, I guess it generates more crumbs. I don't know. We're overthinking this, Rob.
Yeah. Okay,
he stuck some bread in a pillowcase.
I want to be in on it. I want to get it. I want to feel like I'm understanding the humor here.
Gotcha. All right. Well, there's not a lot to do, and there's nothing in there but a Bible and a chessboard and some food. So he kind of, like, make do with one of those things, and he picked food.
Okay. All right. Let's get to some of these questions. Maybe people can explain the bread twist to me. So this is from Shannon Kish, who says, who out of the new house guests do you think is playing the best game? All right. So let's rule out our six people in the Revolution. And so that brings us to just a couple of other people who might be in the eight pack or aligned with it. Who do you think of the new players is playing the best?
Personally, I feel like I would say Zakiya right now. I feel like Zakiya is very well positioned. She's in the majority. She's in the majority within the majority. And not only that, but she is clearly Day's number two. So anytime anyone decides they want to come that way, Devon, I feel, is always going to go out before Zakiya. She's a much bigger target, and they are seen now as a bit of a duo in the house in many ways. At least by the people that are paying attention. So, yeah, I think going forward, Zakiya at least has a few different layers of shielding in front of her at this point.
Okay. And as we're going through the questions, we are still just talking about the show and not getting to the live feeds just yet. So Frickafer says, are you guys concerned at Paulie's eagerness to be confrontational with Jose, even when he's clearly safe? Let's continue talking about this a little bit. He does seem like, you know, he's raring to go looking for a fight with these guys.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, this never made the show in Big Brother 16, but people who watch the feeds really remember that quite often Cody would you know, in the comfort of the big alliance, you know, when they're in the HOH room, just talking, just them, just him and Derek and Frankie and, you know, whoever, that he would often say, like, I'm going to punch so-and-so, or, you know, it was just like cathartic almost for him to like talk about physical violence to these people who were around him, even though you never saw Cody even engage someone in an argument, really. Mm-hmm. So like, to me, this is a bit of like, just kind of the same thing where it's like, Paulie is too built up with anxiety and he doesn't know how to let it off. He's got no outlet in the house. He can't just go play soccer or something, which is probably what he would usually do. So, you know, they tell him not to do it. And he's like, yeah, I won't do it. I won't do it. I won't do it. But it's building, you know, and at a point he just kind of releases. And I think that's what we saw there.
Okay. All right. Let's keep going. This is from Emery, who says, do you think that Bronte messed up Bridget's game by saying that she is listening upstairs? Yeah, that was really a bad job. You know, the spying itself was bad, but then outing the spy, also bad.
Yeah, definitely. And to me, worse, because I think there's a scenario where, like, if Bridget's up there, you know, even if she's a terrible liar, it could be chalked up theoretically to
what
Bridget
a weirdo.
Just doesn't know what the hell's going on. Exactly. She's just up here when there's a house meeting downstairs because she doesn't know any better. But the moment Bronte says that and Davon's like, oh, okay, taking notes. You know what I mean? Like, that's the moment where Bridget, like I said, if this was the Civil War, they're hanging her for treason upstairs right
now. Yeah. No, not good. Not good. Okay, let's keep going. This is from Sheena123. Do you think that Frank made the right decision in putting up Bridget? I mean, who else was potentially on the table for him?
Right. I mean, the only other option is to try to, you know, make a move, like create some waves. And it's just simply too early. He's solidified a majority. Whether or not you think that's like the right majority for him, it doesn't really matter right now. It's a majority. And that's enough to run with for at least the foreseeable, you know, 2-3 weeks, enough to get yourself solid footing and then start to work on like individual one-on-one interpersonal relationships. So no, he's in a good place. And I think that's the only move he can make, because anything else would freak out a member of his alliance.
Okay. This is from Lulik Loves Amy. Do you think that Jose or Devin is the most delusional house guest ever put in Big Brother? So this is pretty interesting, because where Jose really feels like he's running the house, he also is feeling like he is incredibly famous and will win the game and will go on to do all these things after the show. Where I don't know if that was necessarily what Devin was super delusional about. So what do you think if you had to pick the all-time delusional Big Brother house guest?
The word delusional, I have to go with Jose. Because to me, you know, we even got Devin explaining his game, as explainable as it was, which wasn't very, during his game. You know, he, from the first DR or the second DR that he gives, he talks about how he walked through the door and immediately felt the pressure of all the greats who have played this game. Like, I remember that DR from Devin. Because to me, it did speak to a bit of why he spiraled. He like really watched, you know, a lot of this, and then was kind of overwhelmed by the reality of having to play it and just kind of went nuts there for a little while. He was savvy enough to get in on the majority before the majority realized how like goofy and out of control he was. So the fact that he could actually do that to begin with speaks to something. And yeah, I mean, he was, you know, as soon as the tides turned against him, he got it. He was contrite. Like, he saw it coming a little bit. Jose has no idea, really. I mean, this to me is, yeah, next level delusion. I mean, we're talking, he's dubbing himself the messiah of the house. Like, we never really saw that from Devin. You know, he did try to take charge of the alliance and invite people in without other people's permission. But this, I mean, you know, not only is Jose doing that and calling house meetings without approval, I mean, he's flat out telling the targets they're the targets without his alliance's approval. I mean, that's the worst player to have on your team.
Yeah, not good.
I'm like a messiah for the newbies.
Couple of notes on the messiah. There's a great thread on the Big Brother Reddit which points out, do you think that potentially it is the destiny of the messiah to be voted out of the house only to return later this season?
He is risen. He is risen.
Dun, dun,
yeah.
Dun.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, Rob, as a TV watcher and fan of entertainment, I'd be here for it.
Yeah, it'd be great.
I like the sound of it.
Yeah. So if Jose is evicted, as we expect him to be on Thursday night, what do you think that the reaction from the live audience is going to be? Will they overwhelmingly, you know, greet Jose with cheers?
Oh, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I'm excited to see, because I think, you know, he'll get some kind of a pop. I think people react. I just don't know if, like, has he really done anything to warrant booze? Like, he's just, you know, it's just kind of like, it's less like, nothing he said is really malicious so much as just kind of pathetic, you know, that he doesn't get it. So I think if nothing else, I think he'd get a cheer, but I've been wrong before.
Yeah.
I've been reading the audience here.
Yeah, I think he'll get cheers because I think it's sort of just sort of like the, are you not entertained people in the audience?
Yeah. Yeah, really. I mean, he gave us a show at the very least. You cannot argue that.
And we call him delusional and all these things, but I mean, is he not the breakout star of Big Brother 18 to this point?
Well, it's early, but yeah, I think he's definitely been putting in overtime work. You have to certainly have him in your conversation.
Yeah. Okay. This is from Nate Hall. Why does the fan community seem so down on Bronte? At least to me, she hasn't really done too much that makes herself all that unlikable. If we could we put a pin in that conversation and come back to that when we get to the live feeds? If
possible? I would endorse that.
Okay, let's come back to that. Andrew says, does Nicole really like Corey, or is the edit playing it up? I listened to the Happy Hour this past week. Our own Taryn Armstrong said that he's calling the showmance happening this season of Nicole and Corey. What do you think? Is that a actual showmance that you think is going to happen? Will there be six showmance picks in the future?
I think so, Rob. I think it's too hard for Nicole to... If Nicole is single, I think it's going to be hard for her to stay away from the cute single boy for the duration of the summer. I don't think there's... You know, she could try to fight it, but there's not a lot to do in there. They're sitting together just talking anyway. They might as well like move on to something else from time to time.
Is that a good look for Nicole? Because I feel like that didn't she come back this season and say, you know, last time the season played me, but this time I fell for a boy and now I'm going to come back. And then, you know, here she for Corey.
Yeah, well, to be fair, she doesn't know everything. She hasn't seen Corey the way everyone else has.
Dude, you had one job.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally get it. I'm a little frustrated by it, too. But again, I mean, there's nothing to do. Like, I don't think she planned on this. I don't know that she wants this to happen. But at some point, you just kind of throw your hands in the air and, all right, just screw it. You know, like,
whoa,
what else am I doing here? Yeah. Really? There's a lot of downtime.
So is Corey into Nicole?
Yeah, I mean, well, Corey, I mean, really, I think the Paul DR about how he's been following her around is pretty apt. Like, ever since Nicole picked Corey for her team, and Corey knows Nicole is, you know, this returning player, and he doesn't know much about the game, so he really has kind of latched onto her. You know, he does have kind of, you know, some bro-y conversations here and again with the guys, but Corey is very attached to Nicole. You know, they're on a team, and they're both in the 8-pack. I mean, they really are a pretty tight twosome at this point.
Okay. Paul says, do you think that the Paulie-Tiffany duo being formidable or will be formidable as the game progresses, if they can make a secret alliance of their own and add some house members to it? You know, I could see it from the Tiffany side, but I mean, do you feel like Paulie is a candidate to really have a secret alliance with Tiffany?
I think the two of them are really apt to work with each other because of just the nature of their position, how they're the only two siblings in the house, and they are kind of this weird bridge between new players and returning players. In that sense, it makes perfect sense for them to want to work together, and I believe they both do. The problem I have with this question is the word secret, Rob. Everyone already sees the Paulie-Tiffany thing to some degree. It's not very discreet, I believe. And, you know, Devon is like always watching these things and is already a little questionable about, you know, some of the things that have been going on. So,
okay, here's my question, Alex. Is it possible that, or how is it possible that Paulie did not know that Vanessa's sister was in the game? How is that possible?
It's a great question. I mean, how did any of these people not immediately pick up on Tiffany?
I mean, is that a conversation from day two that we saw on the show tonight?
Oh, no, that was this weekend. I mean, that was just
this past
weekend.
How is that possible? I mean, there were leaks out the yin-yang about this cast from before they went into sequester. How is it possible that he doesn't know this?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it just speaks to the level of, you know, who's really paying attention
to
the Big Brother community.
How did Cody not know this before the game started?
I don't know that they're really, like, trolling Big Brother sites trying to ascertain this information. I don't know that that's really who they are. I think Michelle was, and I think that's why you see Michelle. Like, I believe Michelle had a good idea that this was going on because Michelle is a super fan who probably was reading those leaks.
I mean, Davon knew.
Yeah. Yep, and you know Michelle is you know has gotten herself tight with Tiffany and did so very quick and knew right away. So I really believe it's just it speaks to you know maybe Paulie and Cody didn't even watch last season. Who knows? I don't know.
I just between one, she looks and sounds exactly like Vanessa, and two, there were all of these leaks. How I just don't get it.
Yeah, well, I guess if Derek didn't tell him, he doesn't know.
Oh come on, yeah, come on.
My brother Cody.
Yeah, my brother Cody. He didn't tell me, so I don't know. Okay?
Yeah, well, Cody hung you out to dry, bro. Sorry about that. Should have done better for you.
Watch your mouth, what you're saying about my brother, or you're going to have to mess with me. How about that?
I won't be getting chicken parm at the Calafiores anytime in the near future. I know that for sure.
All right. This is from Ian Javero. Is there still a way for Jose to save his game? Should we defer to Johnny Mac on that one?
No!
Yeah, I mean, really, at this point, it's like there's a way Jose can uncover this plot, but the plot is so far along that it's like I don't see any way he can, like, pry votes away from, you know, where they are and onto him. I mean, he spent the entire week making everyone either hate him or laugh at him. The amount of damage control that would need to be done at this point is mind-boggling. Nothing sort of like staggering.
Okay.
I can't envision it. I can't.
All right. Let's do one or two more questions and let's talk live feeds. Razatron, was tonight's veto contest a homage to Glenn and its dog grooming? Yeah.
It could be. You know, I did notice like this is the puzzle where you have to run back and hit the buzzer. This is often like a much later veto. Like, yeah. I know Ian came in as a superhero to host this one at like Final Four in Big Brother 15. So, yeah, we got it early. Maybe it was. Maybe they bumped it up to, you know, give a little something to Glenn, who I know a lot of people are feeling for these days.
Hey, let's not forget, somewhere out there in this great big world, Glenn is still out there.
Yeah, he's still in the boogie down Bronx.
Whether he's in the boogie down Bronx or some boogie down hotel room.
The boogie down Holiday Inn.
By himself for weeks on end. He's out there. He's out there somewhere. Yeah. Boy, wouldn't it be great if we could get some sort of like Big Brother Canada 4 type fake double eviction twist where we could then get Jose and Glenn locked in a room together for a week watching the live feeds?
You know, I had a real problem with that twist at Big Brother Canada, but I almost wouldn't with this because I know Jose would misinterpret what's going on because he doesn't know this game. So, like, even though the fact that he wouldn't have audio and he'd just be watching video, like, he'd watch a conversation between two people who are allies and, like, think it's a fight because he doesn't know they're aligned. So I could potentially sign off on that.
Jose could return to the game in week 3, having watched all of week 2 on the feeds. I know everything. I've got this all down. I'm the mastermind of the whole game. It would be exactly the same.
Just go right back out the door.
The same exact tone of, I know everything. Trust me. I got this. Don't worry.
Trust me. I'm going to.
Yeah. All right. Marissa G., says, could the Spy Girls actually have game? Not even Frank suspects an all-girls alliance. Are you willing to consider that possibility, Alec?
They have varying levels of game. I mean, you know, everyone has some kind of game. It's just how much, you know?
if it's good or not.
Yeah, Bronte, she has, you know, some game in the sense that she wants to be on the right side of the numbers. She has bad game in the sense that she can't seem to find where those numbers actually lie.
Yeah.
Bridget has some game in the sense that she's non-threatening and not someone that people would want to target right away. She's bad in the sense that she's completely non-threatening and can't possibly seemingly have the ruthlessness that it would take to, you know, advance herself in this game and actually put herself in a winning position. To me, the best of the three is Natalie, almost by default.
Probably.
But by default, in the sense that, like, she's not saying anything to hang herself. You know what I mean? Like, if you're just there and kind to everyone, you got a shot at this point. So just from that alone, Natalie's, like, one of the better new players.
Okay. All right. So on that note, let's segue into, we're going to get into the live feeds and, buckle your seatbelt for the live feed talk as we're going to get into some things. So if you are going to be sticking around, stay tuned for that. If not, we will see you on Thursday night live with Johnny Mac, and should be a lot of fun there at 10:15 p.m. Eastern time. So without further ado, hit it, Ryan Elder.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
a spoiler
warning.
A spoiler
warning means that an actual
spoiler
against this country has been detected and that protective action should be taken.
So a couple of spoilers still left in there. Okay. All right. So let's
shake
get
in.
Out. Yeah, they got to go. You need a spoiler trick to get the last couple spoilers out. Okay. All right. So let's go into it again. No real spoilers in terms of the voting and how that's going to go, right? Pretty much, what are we expecting? This same 7-4 split that we've been talking about all week?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, until the game itself advances, strategery is mostly at a standstill at this stage.
Okay, so let's get into talking a little bit about this, because it's been an eventful, 24 hours or so in terms of talking about things from the feeds, because we've been kind of in the clear for the last couple of seasons, but some controversy striking the Big Brother 18 live feeds.
Yeah, definitely, you can point to a bit of a shortage of strategy this season, Rob. Certainly no shortage of, middle school drama.
Yeah.
We got that in spades this year.
Okay, so let's get into it. Where do you want to start? Because really, we have a number of issues to report on.
I don't know. What do you think, Rob?
Let's just get into, why don't we start at the top and get into some comments that were said by between Paul talking about James. Did you see any of this?
Yeah. So this happened late last night and carried over into this morning a bit. It stems essentially from, again, we've talked a little bit about how James has been aggravating Victor and Paul with the pranks. Certainly that plays in. They already have this idea of James, as that guy in the house they don't like. And then you compound it with kind of the developments last night, where you've got Victor seemingly, I guess, making a bit of, to him, a nonchalant remark to Natalie about, I guess, A, that her pants were dragging, and B, how much cheese she was eating. Both factoring into the fact that, this Victor-Natalie showmance that we never saw happened fast and furious in, the first week where there were no feeds, and now they're, I guess, just kind of, just tenuous exes at this point that still want to be in an alliance, which is, the worst place to be in the house. And again, middle school, this one-week relationship, and now the fallout is months, that was my middle school. I don't know about you.
I didn't have any dates in middle school either, Alex. That's another story.
So you've got that. So Natalie reacts badly to Victor's, seemingly somewhat, in his mind, innocent comments. She's kind of venting in the London bedroom to some of the girls, and James happens to be in there. James kind of takes the opportunity to try to pour a little lighter fluid on the fire, as it were. And
that's one hell of a prank.
Yeah. And say that Victor had asked Nicole out on a date, which bothers Natalie. It's completely fabricated.
All right, so hold on. I just want to make sure I'm following this. Okay.
Sure.
So James said that Victor asked Natalie on a date.
Asked Nicole.
So James told Natalie that Victor asked Nicole on a date.
He does.
Okay.
He did that.
All right. And this was just in front of Natalie.
Natalie was there. Believe Bronte and Bridget might have been there as well.
And what was Natalie's reaction to this?
It was mostly a girl talk, but James was in on it. Natalie wasn't pleased with it. It just kind of, she was venting about Victor, and it just kind of compounded her venting.
Why?
And, it just kind of spilled out, and it became a bit of the revolution. The girls in one room talking about how they hate the guys in their alliance, the guys outside playing pool talking about how they hate the girls in their alliance, which it's just comical because these guys are doomed already with each other, and they're tearing each other apart. They have no information, but every little piece they get, which is wrong, is just throwing them into tailspins.
Let me ask you just as we're talking about, you know, these, you know, you have these three idiots on one side and three idiots on the other side in this revolution. Is this all that, like, should we be giving credit to James and the veterans for pitting the rookies against each other?
No, because they're doomed already. Doomed already, and now these guys hate James and want to come after him. And like it's a reason to make James the target over anyone else. So if you're one of the other veterans, sure, James, go for it, man. Yeah, it's really great. It's perfect, man. What you're doing, keep doing it. It's fantastic.
Keep going.
If you're James, though, it makes you the face of the problem when the problem hits on Thursday night, and you got to imagine that. You know, these guys are going to be coming out hard for HOH Thursday night after they find out that the fix is in. I just wouldn't want to be one of the first two names on their list, even if it feels like that, you know, we could still win roadkill. There's still options. There's still ways around this. It just doesn't seem smart to be, you know, so often we see like the face of an alliance go home and, you know, the people underneath him left to reap the benefits. And I feel like James has like inadvertently put himself in that position, even though he's not the strategist that brought this all together.
Okay, so the rookies are all not feeling James at this point.
Right, so you've got the lie, you've got the pranks, and I guess, you know, there may have actually been a date proposed to Nicole. I didn't see it. Someone in the chat room says that Nicole just confirmed it. So, you know, maybe that's a real thing. But all of it compounded to kind of create this sentiment about James. The guys are talking about it outside. They're getting worked up. Bronte comes out to talk, you know, to mention that James said this, and that's where kind of, you know, they have a conversation and realize like common enemy is James. Paul gets worked up and basically says something about how that little Korean man is something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So given the context, given that he was mad, technically James is little and he is of Korean descent, but it was, you know, in the context it was used, certainly it came off pretty badly. And then you had some comments, you know, later that night and again this morning where Bronte said something to the effect of kicking James back to Hong Kong, a place I believe he's never even visited. So it's not the most learned of comments, I would say.
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, boy. And it just seems like we're at a point where we're getting more and more of these different reports where it's just like you have people like between Jose is getting a little fast and loose with things that he's saying in this house. And this is a little bit of the air of the Big Brother 15 that it feels like we're starting to get. We did it. We were fine in 16 and 17, but it does feel like that once they're sort of, and this was a problem that we talked about in Big Brother 15, where once the attitude of intolerance is sort of in the air, it does seem like more and more house guests feel comfortable with going to that place. And I wonder if this is maybe an isolated incident, which is certainly regrettable, or is this maybe the tip of the iceberg?
Yeah, to me, this season is beginning to feel like a bit of a mix between Big Brother 13, Big Brother 15, and Big Brother 16. You can somehow mix those together, you've got the, you know, the 13 vets versus rookies overcoming that thing. You've got the 15 controversy, third nominee. And indeed, I think this game may well play out the way 15 did, where the first person to go home, David Gurton, absolutely shocked. And then you have the minority group, the blonde entourage.
Did you watch David Gurton on Naked Dating?
Absolutely not.
Naked. It's a great clip. If you can get your hands on that, that is a fantastic clip to check out.
I'll have to check that out. But yeah, in week two, you've got the blonde-tourage, you know, so shocked by the Gurton thing that they're, you know, Aaron and Jeremy bend over backwards to win that head of household. And Aaron wins head of household, thinks she's running the house now. And the MVP nominates Nick, and they evict Nick, and they're blindsided by the same people for a second straight week. I believe we could very well see that coming forward, where, you know, Paul or Victor just kill themselves tomorrow night to win head of household, only for, you know, Frank or Corey or somebody to win roadkill, put up like a Bronte, and then despite these guys thinking they're running the show again, we'll see one of their people leave, and again, we'll see their jaws drop.
I do feel like that week two traditionally is a point where the pendulum does swing the other way, so I would not be surprised to see one of the people in the revolution win HOH this week, but potentially then could be upset by what happens with the road.
Yep. But then if they manage to take them both, it does become very interesting because that's a huge group to have to, yeah.
It's just the frustrating thing for me is I come into this. I want to root for the newbies. I want to root for the rookies.
Well, I think a lot of people do, Rob, and I think it really speaks to the either, you know, whether you want to call it, you know, ignorance of some comments that were made or the unlikability of certain people, that the vast majority of people aren't able to root for these underdogs, which we always do.
You're the unlikable underdogs at this point.
Yeah, it's a bit
That's tough to do.
It's a bit of an anomaly in Big Brother. It really is. We always talk about how all you have to do is find yourself in an underdog position and go to sleep in the twisty games. And apparently it's not mutually exclusive anymore to be an underdog and be liked.
Okay. All right. Anything else from the live feeds, or want to jump back into some questions? Open season.
A couple of things. Again, you know, similar to Big Brother 15, we had a little bit of a fight this weekend over alcohol, but not being drunk, just about how there's not enough alcohol to go around, how Big Brother only gives them like 2 bottles of wine and 6 beers for 16 people.
Good.
I guess,
point.
But it's just
we're
funny
not even
to me
drunk
how,
and we're saying stupid comments.
Yeah, well, it's true, but it's funny to me how the fight over alcohol will always exist. It's just either going to be too much or not enough. You know what I mean? There's no balance with the booze here.
Yeah.
I just think, one thing I don't know if we've talked about, but Jose, you know, certainly his delusions are, you know, I know we've gotten it a great deal with those, but I don't know if we've touched on the fact on this podcast that he believes he has an in for hosting the Grammys, which cannot be, it has to be noted, Rob. This guy believes that Big Brother is going to be his step to the Grammys.
Yeah, well,
hosting gig.
I co-sign. I have not watched the Grammys in some time, and I certainly would be in, count me in as a viewer, if Jose hosts the Grammys. So that would be fantastic. Let's get the Messiah out there.
Well, you know firsthand, Rob, how paved with gold that road is from reality TV to mega superstardom worldwide, right?
Yes.
Just easy street now.
Mega superstar. One of the things in the chat room that people are asking for an update on Davon and Tiffany.
Yes. Yeah, this is important, and I'm glad they mentioned it. I can always count on the chat room to remind me of the few pieces that I can't remember, because so much happens right now. With this many people in the house and this many, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of dynamics. Davon really is playing too hard, too fast. She's doing too much. She's in the majority within the majority. That's all you need right now. You can't win the game in week one or week two. But she's already starting to have the conversations like that, you know, the turning inward conversations, which if you're not careful, people are going to hear that. And suddenly you're going to be on the list of people to go home before a Natalie, who's not really doing anything wrong. You know what I mean? She's really worried about Tiffany. Tiffany has had a couple moments now where she's had some mini, you know, Vanessa-esque freakouts. And, you know, that does kind of, I think, trigger all kinds of alarms for Davon, who, you know, died at Vanessa's hand in, you know, one summer previous. So yeah, Davon is really bothered by that. She wants to kind of like cut Tiffany out of the information loop. The problem with that is like Tiffany and Michelle are really tight. Davon is starting to like have separate stories with separate members of her own majority group, which is already like she's weaving a bit too much of a web too early, I think. And, you know, all it's really going to take, she's got a final two with Nicole. She's got her deal with Zakiya. She's talking to those two about Tiffany and Michelle. She's talking to Tiffany and Michelle about, you know, when we're going to need to go after Frank and James. It just seems like eventually two of these people have to have one conversation about what Davon has told them. And that will spell trouble. It's so early for her to be, you know, doing all this. So, you know, she looks good now, but, you know, her sass in the DR may not be long for this world if she keeps this up.
The house isn't big enough for the both of them. Alex, could you talk about Michelle versus Bridget? You guys talked about this a little bit on the Happy Hour. Could you set this up?
Right. Yeah. So we covered this a little bit on Monday night, but this was essentially just a couple of like, you know, petty comments, really. I mean, Bridget, you know, they don't touch on it in the show, but obviously you can tell, like, you have seen Michelle's really bad sunburn on her back. Mm-hmm. They've shown that on the show a couple times. The day of the Roadco competition, Thursday, apparently that Winnebago was not air conditioned. And it was, that was like in the middle. I mean, you're in LA, Rob. You know how hot it is out there.
Oh, believe
Michelle,
me.
Michelle
I know.
Fainted.
Bro,
in the,
I know.
She fainted in that Winnebago. She passed out.
Michelle did or Bridget?
Michelle did.
Okay.
And Bridget, being like the traveling nurse, I think helped like resuscitate her because she was right there. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you know, this weekend, obviously, it's, you know, the House is divided. People know it's divided. They just don't know who's on the right side of the division, right? So, you know, Bridget and Bronte and Natalie, it's a bit of a girl talk from, like, the what they believe is a position of power. So sometimes you get people saying things that they might later regret when they realize they're kind of, you know, they should have put their foot in their mouth. Bridget says something about how she should have shaved off Michelle's eyebrows before resuscitating her. She follows it up immediately with, like, a ha-ha, just kidding. But Zakiya's in the room. Zakiya runs up and tells Michelle that this comment was made and was made without any kind of joke. Like, this was a malicious comment. She wanted to shave off your eyebrows. Mm. And at that moment, Michelle just basically says, like, she looks at the camera and says something like, well, I hope the live feeders call her job and get her fired.
You know what to do.
Michelle, yeah. Michelle is, like, the one person who, like, A, knows enough to know that that's a thing, and B, knows enough to know that you should not do that. That that's just a card not to play, A, this early in the game, and B, when something that, like, honestly innocent was said.
Yeah, boy. A real Joffrey move to go right to that of get her fired. Get her fired. Started. You know, everybody, you're on it. Fire Bridget immediately.
Totally. Yeah. And I, you know, and I think, you know, it, you know, Michelle's in a really good position right now. And she's, you know, I think most people would say she's probably the player most taking your advice. So just go to bed. You know, don't say anything. Don't do anything. She's really
off the radar. Yeah, but don't say anything. Also means don't start trying to get people fired from within the house at their job.
Right. Well, if you're talking to the camera, though, it can't really come back to bite you in the game, even if it is a kind of a, you know, shitty thing to do. Mm-hmm. The thing about Michelle, though, is, like, you know, it does speak maybe to, you know, she's a super fan who was, you know, people have found her comments on Reddit. She's very opinionated. Will she be able to rein those when she needs to work with some of these people? You know what I mean? Like, she needs to be someone who can chill and not say the wrong thing at the wrong time. And it remains to be seen. When the microscope gets a little closer to her, when some of these big, boisterous, obnoxious, stupid people are gone, you know, she's got to be able to make friends still.
Is it true that Michelle got a bad sunburn because James replaced the sunblock with mayonnaise?
I think the sunburn predates the mayo, Frank. But if that were the case, then I would have a legitimate reason to be mad at James. I got to be honest with you, Rob. Full disclosure, I wouldn't be crazy about the pranks if I was living in the Big Brother house.
No, like, I hate pranks.
No, especially when I'm the culprit. Like, we were at Podcast House in New York, and Jordan Parhar thinks it's a huge riot to wake me up by putting me on Snapchat. Aha, isn't it hilarious? No, Jordan, it's not that funny. It's really not. No. This is not how I wanted to wake up. No one asked for this.
Do Big Brother contestants think pranks are far funnier than us casuals do?
I think it's a bit of a mixed bag. I think you've got James thinking it's hysterical and some house guests thinking it's hysterical and, like, confirmation bias from CBS saying, oh, trust, the fans love it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Which
trust me.
Trust Jose.
I guarantee you there's a percentage of fans who love it. I just don't know that that percentage is, like, a majority. I don't know that that's the 8-pack in terms of what we're talking about here. That's more the Revolution side of things.
Okay. All right. So let's say Jen Manning. Will Jose spin his game and mindset around after he realizes he's been blindsided and once he gets to sequester? No, right?
No. I mean, I can't imagine. I just, you know, to me, what's going to be most interesting, you know, not only to see his jaw hit the floor, but, like, you know, Paul just runs so hot and cold. There are times when Paul looks a half decent player. When he's calmed down and he knows chess, like, he was teaching Nicole some chess this morning and they're having a candid conversation and he's talking about how he doesn't like, you know, all the things that are happening and he'd like to distance himself from them. He just doesn't know what to do. You know, those are the right things to say. There are just times where he's so emotional that he can't help himself. And he says, like, the worst things to say.
Yeah.
And including, like, if this doesn't go our way Thursday night, I'm going to punch somebody, which, I mean, I hope he does it for his sake, but if he did, you know, we're going to see it live. So get your popcorn ready.
Get your popcorn ready. All right. This is from Lauren Doty. There doesn't seem to be one mastermind controlling the house this season. Sorry, Jose. Do you think that this will make for a better or worse season? Are we just in for maybe just a long slog this season in terms of, you know, we've had these different Survivor seasons and Big Brother seasons over the years where it's just like, with all due respect to the great Beckers, a train wreck season? Do you think that we could be headed in that direction?
I guess it depends on how you define train wreck. I don't think it's necessarily destined to be a strategic train wreck. If you think maybe, you know, it's going to be emotional and drama fueled, I could certainly get behind that. But to me, again, I invoke BB15, where it's like I don't see any one player that's clearly running everything. You know, like an Andy might emerge from the majority group later who's just insulated very well and kind of, you know, got a little bit of a finger in every pie. But as it is right now, you've got like a majority group who may stick together and kind of, you know, it's possible this early game will be boring. It's possible we'll see four or five evictions that play out predictably. It seems unlikely given the increasing rate at which the Davon Tiffany paranoia and all that is building. But even if that were to come to fruition, you've still got a majority group of eight that is going to have to eliminate each other by some method. And they all have at least some modicum of decent game awareness, with the possible exception of Corey. Okay. And then there's Pauly there, who like some people would pick up to try to use against the eight. So still plenty to look forward to, I think. This game could have a lot of upside left.
All right, let's take another couple of questions. Let's take from Thomas McGee. Do you think that the eight-pack Lions will last long? I hope so. So Thomas is rooting for the eight pack to last. I feel like that at this point in the game, tell me what you think about this, that I think that you can sort of tell who the real players are by the people who are really putting all their eggs in this large alliances basket, where they're talking about the eight pack in the diary room. Like, I have no problem with a person being in the eight pack, but the people that are referencing the eight pack, like in the third person in the diary room, talking about how they really need it to come through, I feel like that those are the people who are not the real power players in the game.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, I mean, I guess, you know, there's two ways to look at this, because Frank references it, and I think Frank is doing a good job of putting in work socially more than most people in the eight pack with the other side. Certainly, he's got a good thing going with kind of his little, you know, him, Corey, Pauly have kind of a side contingent almost. But yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I think the
like
eight
it's pack, not going to hold. Like, the last eight people in the game aren't going to be the eight
right,
pack. So something
right.
else is going to come out of this. Like, can you count on every person in the eight pack to always be doing what you want them to do?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's going to ride or die on the strength of either A, Davon's talking about other people getting back to them, or B, Davon deciding to make a move against the group. I feel like Davon is going to be the catalyst that breaks it up, no matter how it plays out, whether it's like at Davon's expense or Davon doing it at another person's expense. Davon is going to be a big factor as to how that group disintegrates.
And make a Survivor parallel, tell me if you like it or not. Is Davon the Jeff Varner of Big Brother?
Oh, I could definitely see that. Yeah, I mean, right, she's back to play a second time. She, you know, business unfinished from the first time, gone way too early. She feels like she has to do things, and she's doing the right things. She's just overdoing, mm-hmm. right? She would be
good
much better off.
Right, fan favorite.
She set herself up perfectly, and then she continued to do, whereas at that point, you really can almost coast and be better for it.
Yeah, okay. She's a real game changer, Davon. You would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she's been the biggest, you know, I mean, and this is another factor too, to me, is that last night they're talking about how could this ever possibly go against us? And, you know, Paul and Jose quickly confirmed, like, well, we know if I go that Davon betrayed us.
Yes.
Like, that's the one thing they know. You know what I mean? And you don't want to be that person that's seen that way, where, like, as soon as Jose goes tomorrow, all angry eyes turn to Davon. That it's best to put someone else in that spot if you can. Like, surely she could have done something to kind of, like, you know, shove Zakiya up there or something. But that she hasn't. You know what I mean? She's very sassy, and she's good at making faces behind people's backs. She needs to be a little better at playing the diplomat.
Okay. All right. Call AJ Mass. Jordan R. 18. Can someone tell me the difference between Natalie and Michelle? Which one hosted the veto competition? Well, can you help Jordan R. 18? What is the difference in your mind between Michelle and Natalie? Who hosted the veto competition?
Sure. So Michelle was the fire hydrant. Yeah. She hosted the veto competition. Michelle often wears glasses. Michelle was in Pixels this week. They actually just shunned the Pixels today on the feeds.
Okay.
And actually Michelle was crying before the feeds went down. She was actually, I think she was just very over the Pixels. It is a bit much, Rob. It's a lot of skin they have to show in those outfits. Natalie, on the other hand, she's the Venezuelan princess. She is the one who had the... yeah, she is one of the spy girls. She's the one who had the early showmance with Victor, and that flamed out before he ever even got to see a whiff of it. And she actually seems to be, even though she has no real knowledge of the game, Michelle is the super fan. Natalie seems to have very little knowledge of the game, but she seems very perceptive and like someone who could potentially, you know, be that person who had five or four. Like, how's this person still here? You know what I mean? I think Natalie's a strong candidate for that slot.
Okay. This is from Luli Doro. Do you guys think that someone is going to tell the other side that Jose is leaving? Okay, so we're less than 24 hours away from the eviction. Do you think that Jose gets to the live show on Thursday night without finding out that he is going to be out the door?
Trust me, I'm going to have no problems with getting everyone on board and getting Pauly out of the house this week.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Dun, dun, I don't. Dun. Sorry, I can't trust you, dude. I know more than you.
Trust me.
Yeah, just trust me, Jose, please, for your sake. I think the best thing in the favor of the fans, obviously the fans want the good blind side. It would be great for us if they could just hold on to this for another 24 hours, right? I think the best thing going for that argument is that we've heard the vets talk a little bit about how they want that. They believe they were trying to make good TV out of this. You know, that's I guess part of the benefit of being so much better than your opponent. You know what I mean? That you can just dominate them. Like when you're winning a baseball game, Rob, 20-1, you can like change up your stance a little bit. Try something different. Like throw a silly pitch every now and again. Because if they hit a home run, well, it's 20-2. Who cares? You know what I mean? This is kind of like that, where it's like, why not go ahead and make it the best TV you can? Because you've already spun them up to the point where like they're not getting themselves untangled. So okay. I feel like Frank especially is really pushing this.
Let's do two more questions. Sandy Brooks says, how long before the Revolution finds out that Frank won the roadkill comp? I'm surprised that it hasn't leaked yet. I mean, do you think it's imminent that they're going to find out? I don't.
Yeah, no, I don't think these people are perceptive enough or, you know, and I think Frank has done a good job. You know, I really love that diary room where he went sad clown. You know, that was very good. That speaks to how you're able to just in the
Frank's
moment that
like,
you need
good.
To put on a good face, you
Frank,
know, like
Frank
when he
been
won
really
that comp.
Strong.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, Frank hasn't done anything to reveal himself. He's gone out of his way, I think, to be on the good side. And I haven't seen anything that, you know, makes him the target anytime soon. They're just talking about James.
Okay. Let's do one last question. This is from Ram 01099. I saw a live feed update where Paul was considering not using the veto on himself. How close was that to happening?
Oh man, I want to think it wasn't that close. Obviously, I guess we'll never know exactly how close. He did talk about it for longer than any rational human being should talk about it in week one. That's like such a cute move that you shouldn't even do in like week eight, let alone week one.
Yeah,
He was thinking about using it on Jose, thinking himself safe. Good thing he didn't. He wasn't safe at all.
Yeah, there's a great clip where the three male idiots in the Revolution were talking about how they really wanted to come into this game and they weren't going to watch a lot of the previous seasons. That Jose and Paul, they really just wanted to come in blind. Why do people watch the old seasons, Alex? That Paul wanted to come in here like not knowing a lot so he could really just trust his instincts, which has just been completely dead on locked in so far this season.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think, you know, it's frustrating to hear that, you know what I mean? From somebody who studies that, to me, it's like, again, yeah, it's like refusing to study the day before an exam or knowing you're taking the bar. And, you know, it's not just an exam. It's an exam where how other people do affects you. You know what I mean? It's one of those where like only this many people can pass and you still choose not to study. You know what I mean? So you're inherently giving yourself a disadvantage relative to others. It's not just about being unprepared. It's the knowledge that others are super prepared. And, you know, Natalie talked about this in her interview where she feels like it can be a disadvantage to watch the game. I'll just point to, you know, the past winners, Steve, Derek, Ian, Andy. These are our super fans. There's a reason they win the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just look at our winners and reevaluate whether or not it matters to have studied the game.
Yeah. Look, don't be a total, I mean, I was gonna say don't be a big nerd about it, but I feel like that look, that's maybe that's not a bad way to go, but it doesn't hurt to know, like, this idea that it is a good idea, just like what do you need to know? How hard is this?
Yeah, and I mean, Johnny Mack, you know, most people don't have the discipline to do what he did last summer, but he all summer long was able to act like he knew nothing about the game when he had very, very clearly watched it all.
Yeah. All right. Well, Alex, lots of fun to talk about all this stuff. I'm really looking forward to this eviction show on Thursday. I think it's going to be, could be a potentially great moment when we get to see Jose out there live with Julie, where he's like, how? I don't understand. How did this happen?
Yeah, no, we could definitely, you know, we could be talking about this this Thursday, tomorrow night, as, you know, when we're ranking the greatest blindsides, we could very easily be talking about Jose's eviction in that conversation.
Yeah, soon. It'll be, and again, probably great live feeds as well on Thursday night, where the Revolution finds out what hit them.
Yeah, especially if you've got some kind of endurance comp, like last year, or I'm sorry, not last year, with Big Brother 15, after the David blindside, they go right into the Crisco competition, where all night they're like slipping and sliding, and like Aaron and Jeremy feel the sense of urgency, but they're also mouthing off because they can't control their anger at that moment. Gina Marie is calling everyone a cockroach and saying no chicken. Oh, no, that was no, the
that
following.
Was the name.
But, you know, if that's any indicator, Rob, then we have some good drama to look forward to.
Yeah, so it should be a very fun live feed segment as well as we get into, or at least if not on Thursday night, then at least Sunday night to talk about everything that happens in the next couple days. And of course, should be very fun. So Eviction coming up tomorrow night, next HOH, Johnny Mac, jam-packed show. Brent will be here to talk about everything as well. So look for that one on Thursday. Make sure you don't miss an episode of the podcast by subscribing. Go to robiswebsite.com/iTunes. Alex, or the chat room, do you have any ideas for a hashtag?
I feel like there was a lot of good hashtag possibilities tonight. I have Free Dandelion as a possibility. I have Just Trust as a possibility.
Trust me.
Three Stooges.
Yeah, that's good. All right, chat room, vote on the hashtag while we just let you know what else is coming up here on the podcast. Of course, Alex and I are going to be back on Friday. Want to go live again? We'll do that live. That was good.
Yeah, okay. Works for me, Rob.
We'll be live on Friday morning to update everything that was coming up from the feeds. On the aforementioned, should be a good Thursday night in the Big Brother house, especially if we get somebody in the Revolution winning the HOH, where then they really feel like they could tell off the rest of the house. That'll be some fireworks going on Thursday. We'll be there to cover all of it live. Be on the lookout for that. We'll also post that as a podcast. Plus, we will have some exit interview questions that we will be waiting with bated breath for the Jose from the CEO.
In my mind.
CEO to respond to everything that went on. Plus, we got a couple other fun podcasts. Talked with the creator of the Survivor Brooklyn game. That was a fun podcast. Talked to Matt Pavlovich, came by the studio to talk about his Survivor season, which he put on in Brooklyn with Sophie and Andrea, and the person who's going to be on Survivor 33. Talked to him about that. Plus, Kurt Clark came or was on the Skype with me on his birthday week to talk about everything that was going on Escape the Night by Joey Graceffa, a murder mystery, which is on YouTube Red. That's all up on the website this week. And plus everything with Game of Thrones, if you missed any of that coverage on post-show recaps. All right, Alex, what's the chat room saying?
There's no consensus, Rob. I'm going to make a call. I'm okay. Going to go with, let's go with Hanged for Treason, because I brought it up twice.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, hang for treason. All right, that's your hashtag.
That's your hashtag.
Great job by Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, pulling all of the questions. So looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say on robiswebsite.com. Of course, follow Alex Kidwell on Twitter. I'm at Rob Cisternino. Very fun show tonight here with Alex, especially you guys in the chat room as well. Hope you can join us on Thursday night with Johnny Mac. Take care, everybody. Have a good one.